Hi, welcome to Standard's weekly economic podcast. My name is Kim Lings and I'm the chief economist within Standard. The intention with these weekly podcasts is to unpack some of the key economic developments that have unfolded over the past week. And I think for this week, we need to focus on three big discussion points. The first is South Africa's medium-term budget policy statement that was released by the Minister of Finance on Wednesday. Obviously, there's a lot of content within that document, a lot of discussion points. But it might be useful to try and just draw out what are the key focus areas. The second is a broader topic, and that relates to some of the more recent US economic data, particularly the employment data, which softened a bit, some other data within the US that looks a bit softer, and how the US Federal Reserve is interpreting all of this and seems to be messaging that interest rates in the US have peaked, which obviously allowed markets to rally quite strongly during the course of last week. So I think let's focus on those two key issues for the moment. The Minister of Finance presented the medium-term budget policy statement on Wednesday last week, and there were a couple of key things I think we need to focus on. The first is the revenue shortfall. The Minister announced a tax revenue shortfall of about 56 billion. That was more or less as expected. If we break down that 56 billion, most of the revenue shortfall was in two categories. The first, corporate taxes, declined by 35 billion, so a substantial miss in terms of corporate tax revenue, and then VAT underperformed by about 25 billion. The VAT underperformance is a little bit misleading because most of that was related to an increase in VAT refunds as opposed to an actual loss of VAT revenue. But I guess the net result is the same. So those two categories doing most of the damage. On the plus side, personal income tax ahead of budget by about 6.4 billion. And that would suggest that even though the economy is fairly weak, the labor market has actually been fairly resilient. And so the minister has been able to generate a little bit more tax revenue than he was expecting. Lastly, on the tax side, it's interesting to see that if you break down that corporate tax revenue by sector, by far most of that revenue loss was in the mining sector. I don't think that's a particular surprise. It's got a lot to do with mining companies not enjoying the same commodity price boom that they had in the preceding years. But there are a couple of sectors, including the finance sector, where tax revenue was actually ahead of budget. So it's not as if every single category of corporate revenue is under substantial pressure. It's also, I think, important to recognize that because this year we've got a tax revenue shortfall, it does tend to impact the next 2 years. And as a consequence, the minister revised down his revenue estimates for the next 2 years by 53 billion and then by around about 67 billion. So it has a knock-on effect, if you like. On the expenditure side, the minister announced that, yes, government expenditure is running ahead of budget by about 29 billion. Most of that related to the wage increase that was put through that was higher than expected. But I guess where there was a surprise is that the minister then said, well, we're going to have to claw back some of that increase. In fact, most of it we're going to have to claw back by way of cuts in expenditure across a range of departments. And so the minister announced a fairly substantial pullback in expenditure that will impact provinces as well as key government departments. Exactly which areas of expenditure will be curtailed, we're not sure. We'll get more detail on that. But at least the minister is making good on his promise, which he made at the time of the budget, that said if salaries go up more than we had budgeted for, we will claw back that expenditure elsewhere. We'll have to wait and see whether he can actually deliver that, because obviously many government departments will push back on those cuts. But on the face of it, it's the minister trying to be disciplined and trying to end up with a budget deficit that is manageable. So overall, the budget deficit does increase to 4.9% of GDP. In February, he had projected it at 4%. So some fiscal slippage, certainly not disastrous. But I guess more importantly, the minister is still sticking to the expectation that the government can deliver a primary budget surplus over the next couple of years, which, if he can achieve that, would suggest that government is being disciplined overall. as I said previously, we have to wait and see whether that can actually materialize. I think there will be generally upward pressure on government expenditure over the next few years and downward pressure on government tax revenue, because the minister's still not forecasting economic growth to increase above 2% for the next 3 years, which is obviously not a great outcome. The other key numbers to be aware of in the medium-term budget is that government debt is now projected to peak at 77.7% of GDP in the next couple of years. That's hugely above where we had previously. So it's gone from an expectation of government debt going to 73%, now rising to 77%. And when you consider that each percent of GDP for the moment is in the order of 60 billion, that's a huge deterioration in government's debt profile. Some of that relates to the revenue shortfall, but a significant portion of that simply relates to the exchange rate depreciation. In other words, what government has to do is take their foreign debt and convert that into rands. And if the currency is weakening, then clearly in rand terms you have more debt, and that obviously pushes out the debt metric. So our government debt profile is not pleasing, and the rating agencies will look at that fairly carefully. Linked to that deterioration in the government debt profile is the fact that interest cost of government debt is now going to go through another phase of acceleration. It's on its way up to 22% of total tax revenue. That is enormous by any standard. Historically, if you look at when Trevor Manuel left as Minister of Finance, tax revenue was around about 7% of government tax revenue. The interest cost was about 7% of total revenue. It's on its way to 22%. And that move up is obviously putting a huge amount of pressure on other forms of government expenditure. And it clearly is one of the worst performing elements within the government's budget overall. So I would say that on the face of it, government is trying to be disciplined. They're trying to steer the fiscal position in the right direction. But without strong and sustained economic growth, it's very difficult to achieve a good outcome. And I think that's going to remain the case for the next couple of years unless we can meaningfully improve the growth trajectory. By meaningful, I don't mean taking the growth rate to 1.5%. I mean trying to lift the growth rate up to 3 or 4% and then try and sustain it at that level. So I would applaud the government or the minister for his efforts to show fiscal discipline, but I think the underlying deterioration is very clear, and it's entirely feasible that the credit rating agencies will now put us on a negative outlook. It doesn't mean an actual downgrade. It just suggests that they are cautious that there could be further deterioration. Part of that could relate to the fact that we haven't been able to resolve the funding for the state-owned enterprises, particularly Transnet, but other enterprises as well. And so government clearly is not in a position to make those types of key decisions. And that creates a high level of uncertainty about what the restructuring and the refunding of state-owned enterprises is going to cost government. And so I think investors and rating agencies will be a little bit nervous about that dynamic. The second topic that I think is useful to discuss is some of the more recent US economic data, in particular the employment number, the ISM services index, and then the outcome of the Federal Reserve's latest interest rate meeting. If we look at the employment numbers, the US created a decent 150,000 jobs in the month, nothing wrong with that, but the market was thinking 180,000, so below expectations. In addition, if we look at the unemployment rate, it ticked slightly higher. If I look at the wage growth, it moved slightly lower. All of those numbers helping to ease concerns about inflationary pressure in the US and the need for the US to keep hiking interest rates. If I look at the ISM services index, it also moderated, suggesting a soft landing that is unfolding within the service sector. And up until now, the service sector has been especially strong in the US. And when we break down inflation, a lot of the inflationary pressure has related to the exact same service sectors. And so to see an easing of activity within that area of the economy is welcome. It's not because the economy itself is slowing, it's more because it eases some of the concerns around inflation. And it does feed this narrative that the US Federal Reserve is now at the top of the interest rate cycle. The Federal Reserve's Federal Open Market Committee meeting decided to keep interest rates unchanged. But I think what was important is the press conference that followed that. At the press conference, Chairman Powell didn't say outright that the U.S. is at the top of the interest rate cycle. But he sounded fairly dovish. He didn't express any real concerns about inflation or that there would need to be a further interest rate hike. He came across as being fairly comfortable with the position that the Fed finds themselves at. And so markets interpret that to suggest that the Fed is at the top of the interest rate cycle and that the next move in interest rates is to the downside. That doesn't mean that the Fed is about to start cutting interest rates. Far from it. They've made it abundantly clear that they're likely to keep interest rates unchanged at these levels for a considerable time. We're assuming all the way through to the second half of next year. But simply getting more comfortable that you're at the top of the interest rate cycle is good news for markets. And we saw bond and equity markets rally strongly last week as it digested all of this data. It also encourages flows into emerging markets because with the Fed suggesting that they're at the top of the interest rate cycle, it starts to open the door more fully for emerging markets to cut interest rates. Now, some emerging markets have already started to cut, particularly in South America. But if it is assumed that the Fed is done with the interest rate cycle, it eases the pressure on emerging markets, including the South African Reserve Bank. And so I think that is good news for risk assets within the emerging market space. So overall, a welcome change in sentiment. It's been good for markets. I think that sentiment can persist over the coming weeks and into the end of the year. But I think what we got to be careful about is assuming that what's going to follow quite soon are interest rate cuts within the major economies. I don't think that's the case. If I look at the Bank of England, the European Central Bank, and now the Federal Reserve, I think we've got to take them at face value. They are wanting to keep interest rates elevated until inflation is firmly under control and much closer to their 2% target level, which for me suggests we can only look for a cut in interest rates from the major economies in the second half of next year. But I think that is a better outcome than what we've experienced over the last year, where we weren't sure where the top of the interest rate cycle would ultimately be. So that's all from me from this week. Hope it makes some sense, and we'll catch up in a week's time. Cheers for now.